featuring a southern style of cooking walleye and catfish, chicken, shrimp, sandwiches, and more. Available for dine-in and carry-out. The Seaboat, 402 West Kirby, across from Jerry's IGA in Champaign. Catering services available at 355-9933.
In sports, U.S. track athlete Dawn Harper of East St. Louis has won a gold medal in the 100-meter hurdles, posting a personal best 12.54 seconds. American Sonia Richards earned a bronze medal in the women's 400 meters. Baseball Hall of Famer Carl Yastrzemski has been hospitalized for tests today after experiencing what his spokesman called chest pains. When asked if it was serious, the spokesman said, quoting here, "Anytime you're in the hospital, it's got to be pretty serious." The 68-year-old Yastrzemski was baseball's last player to win the Triple Crown in 1967 when he led the Boston Red Sox to their first pennant in 21 years. New Indiana basketball coach Tom Crean has signed a 10-year deal worth $23.6 million. Crean originally accepted an 8-year package when he was hired in April, but the university agreed last month to add 2 more years to the contract. School officials say the deal includes a base salary of $600,000 a year with additional payments for promotional work. The Chicago Cubs are back at Wrigley Field, where they have the best home record in the National League. After winning 44 games last season at home, the Cubs are 45-17 at Wrigley so far this year. Tonight, they'll take on Cincinnati. Braden Looper will try to match his career high in wins tonight when he takes the mound for the St. Louis Cardinals in the opener of a 2-game set against Pittsburgh. Looper is 11-9 this season. And the Chicago White Sox will continue their series against the Seattle Mariners tonight. They'll try to keep their hold on the top spot in the AL Central. That's sports.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Christie Clinic Association, with offices in Champaign, Urbana, Rantoul, Mahomet, Tuscola, and Danville, providing quality health care to the residents of Central Illinois.
Ever since its suspect in the anthrax attacks committed suicide, the FBI has been under pressure to convince the public that Army scientist Bruce Ivins was really behind the attacks of 2001. The case against him rests in part on a complex genetic technique. Scientists have been asking for more details so they can judge for themselves. Yesterday, the FBI offered more details about the science it used. NPR's David Kestenbaum reports.
FBI scientists spent over 2 hours with reporters doing their best to explain how DNA had led them to a vial of anthrax spores in Bruce Ivins' lab. The story that emerged is this. Early on, investigators noticed something unusual about the spores sent through the mail. They were not all identical.
The spore preparations in the envelope had a specific phenotypic variation. That means spores that looked physically different than neighbors.
This is Vahit Majidi,
Assistant Director of Weapons of Mass Destruction, FBI.
Majidi says it was like you had a bowl of blue M&Ms, but mixed in were a few that were brown or green or red. The fact that those were in there was like a fingerprint. Potentially a way to trace the anthrax in the letters back to its source. Investigators had collected over 1,000 samples from labs in the U.S. and abroad, and when they tested them, 8 had the genetic fingerprint. The other samples didn't match at all.
What genetics allowed us to do was to determine that there are 8 samples out there that exactly match the letters. And from that, the investigations led us to RMR-1029.
RMR-1029 was the name of a flask that Bruce Ivins had custody of. The sample had been shared with other researchers, though, and investigators say at least one of the matching samples was at a different institution entirely. So how many people had access to those spores?
Roughly about 100.
Bruce Ivins' lawyer says this shows the FBI's case is weak, that scores of people had access to the same mixture of spores. Majidi responds that the FBI looked at those 100 people and ruled out everybody but Ivins. Questions have also been raised about whether Ivins had the necessary tools in his lab to make the finely powdered spores found in some of the letters. Majidi says the answer is yes. Investigators were able to do it. The FBI says it would take one person working from 3 to 7 days. The only thing they were not able to reproduce was a silicon compound that showed up inside the spores used in the attacks. But Majidi says that's not surprising. It can be hard to duplicate someone's recipe.
It's like cooking a stew in your kitchen. It's impossible to get the exact same taste twice in a row simply because of the variations of the material that you add.
How strong do you think the case is overall?
Obviously, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you if I thought the case was anything but very strong.
When the FBI first began talking about this case, scientists had lots of questions. One group even put out a list of points they wanted clarified. Thomas Inglesby is deputy director of that group, the Center for Biosecurity at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center.
I have a lot of confidence in the abilities of the FBI, and they are proceeding earnestly and disclosing information and should be commended for that. But given a case of this importance to the country, and given that this kind of science has never been used in a court of law before, it's going to be important to present this scientific evidence to an independent expert review.
Inglesby was not at the briefing, but he says it sounds like some of the questions he had have been answered. He says the FBI should publish its work in a scientific journal. The FBI says it has done some of that already, and more papers are in the works. David Kestenbaum, NPR News.
Illinois State Senate President Emil Jones says that after more than 3 decades in office, he will retire. Ben Calhoun reports.
The news leaked out Sunday night when state senators got phone calls saying that Jones would announce his retirement Monday afternoon. By the morning, those close to the president were publicly confirming it.
I think the president, made a decision with his family based on the fact that he's been in serving 36 years, and that's long enough.
State Senator Ricky Hendon is one of Jones's top lieutenants, serving as assistant majority leader in the chamber. Hendon denies any speculation that the 72-year-old Senate president's decision was based on health reasons.
Health is fine. His mind is sharp. So that has nothing to do with it.
By mid-afternoon, Jones released a statement confirming the news, beginning the final chapter of a storied career in Illinois politics. Jones started out as a streets and sanitation worker in Chicago and then was elected state representative in 1972. He moved to the state Senate 10 years later, where he continued to work his way up the ladders of Illinois politics, eventually moving up to Democratic minority leader. He led the Democrats as they took back control of the state Senate in 2002, and then Jones was elected state Senate president. Since then, he's expanded his majority to an imposing veto-proof 37-22 margin. Jones is known for his old-school bare-knuckle brand of politics. His exit is nothing less than a game-changer for Springfield and will affect political fortunes at all levels of state politics.
Even when I are homeboys, man.
Governor Rod Blagojevich arguably stands to lose the most from Jones's departure. Jones has been an invaluable ally for Blagojevich in his feuds with Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. Recently, Blagojevich delivered a speech in Chicago, repeatedly thanking Jones, who's one of a few allies the governor has left in Springfield.
I have fewer friends now than I had before I was governor, but it's nice to know I still got Emil. And Emil, my friend, thank you so much for being there with us and fighting the good fight.
Most immediately, Jones's announcement threatens Blagojevich's ability to push through his multi-billion-dollar capital spending plan for road, bridge, and school construction. Long-term, the void Jones leaves opens a wide array of possibilities that could change the fundamental power balances of state government.
It represents a revolution at our capital.
Cindy Canary heads the Illinois Campaign for Political Reform. She says Jones built a powerful majority in the state Senate, but he also kept such tight control over his members that it sometimes contributed to gridlock.
He really got his Dems elected, but he also has been really a rather gruff leader. He's been outspoken. He's been often obstinate about allowing bills to move forward. He's got that I'm in charge of the Senate and it's my playground and nobody else's kind of attitude.
Already, Jones's announcement has set off a scramble of state senators looking to take his place. Before the news was even official, the list of possible replacements was already more than half a dozen names long. Aside from the ensuing fight for power in the state Senate, Jones's idea about who will take over his state Senate seat has also already become an issue. Jones has left just enough time for the Democratic Party to swap a hand-picked successor onto the fall ballot. The Senate president has said publicly that he would like his son, Emil Jones III, to succeed him. an idea State Senator Ricky Hendon confirmed and endorsed.
He's watched his father work, so he knows the ins and outs of state government. I think he'd be an excellent choice.
The parent-child office swap is an old standby among Illinois politicians, and the maneuver has been a favorite recently. Former Congressman Bill Lipinski, former Cook County Board President John Stroger, and former Cook County Board President Bobby Steele have all been replaced by their children through internal Democratic Party deals. Cindy Canary wasn't as keen on the idea as Hendon.
You know, this replacing, you know, yourself with your children, your spouses, is kind of an old Illinois tradition that has really outlived its public support.
If Jones succeeds in swapping his son onto the ballot, the switcheroo could prove an awkward one for one of Jones' political mentees.
Jones really was a mentor to Senator Obama in teaching him the ropes.
Illinois Senator Barack Obama is set to accept the Democratic nomination next week. In many ways, Obama has tried to keep himself separated from the unsavory practices of Illinois politics. If Jones does swap his son onto the ticket, Obama could soon find himself facing questions about Jones, who is commonly referred to as Obama's political godfather.
It will at least temporarily put Chicago back and Illinois back in the papers as the Wild West of politics, where we do things as insiders and run like a machine.
In an official statement, Jones didn't say anything about who he hopes will replace him as state senator or as Senate president. Instead, Jones simply thanked the people of his district and the members of his caucus and listed off his accomplishments during his time in office. Other than that, Jones says only that he will officially step down at the end of his current term. I'm Ben Calhoun.
It seems as though talk about building a new four-lane highway in western Illinois has gone on forever. In fact, some plans for a new road linking Macomb to Peoria date back 35 or 40 years. Supporters of the proposed Route 336 say now is the time to make it a reality, but opponents feel the timing couldn't be worse. Rich Egger reports.
Members of the 336 Coalition rallied at Farmington Central School on an unseasonably mild mid-August evening. The rally attracted politicians, economic development professionals, and bankers. Among those there were mayors whose towns are along the proposed path of the highway. Kevin Mead is Canton's mayor.
Well, for us, the primary drive is economic development. You know, we're the only county left that has no four-lane highway. So for us, we see a lot of opportunities coming by with businesses who want to locate but need a reliable transportation system, meaning a four-lane highway, in order to do it.
Macomb Mayor Mick Wislett also feels the highway will enhance economic development.
We're going to pick up other businesses that are going to feed into maybe Caterpillar or somebody like that. And it all hinges on roads.
Farmington Mayor Bud Stovall concurs and adds the highway could improve safety.
Route 116 going east of here is a real bevy of traffic from 6 o'clock in the morning till about 9, and about 3:30 in the afternoon till 7. It could be a little dangerous.
The timing of the rally is no accident. These rallies are held during election years for many state and federal lawmakers.
You know, my position is whatever I can do to make this happen, I'll do it.
Democratic Congressman Phil Hare said the federal government is ready to provide money, but the state needs to come up with matching money. He said the governor and legislative leaders must end their fighting and work out an agreement on a plan to pay for construction projects. Hare believes everyone will win when the Macomb to Peoria Highway gets moving.
You know, and there are no losers in this. I mean, I think the losers are all of us if we can't get this capital plan out and we can't get that federal highway funds to move. I think that would be a real shame.
But one person who stands to lose if the highway is built is Bob Abbott.
Well, the last plan that we saw, our house had a big red X in it, so our house is gone.
The retired farmer has lived in that house on Highway 95 near Smithfield for nearly 44 years. Abbott said no one from the state has ever talked to him about the Route 336 project or why his home might be sacrificed.
And I'm not against progress. If we needed this highway, it would be different, but there's no need for it.
Why do you say that?
Well, first, we don't take care of the roads we got. And the traffic, I think IDOT would even tell you that feasibility on traffic is not there.
Abbott has the support of Noel Lane. He lives a few miles from the likely path of the highway, so he would not be directly impacted. But Lane still opposes it.
It's a waste of money. Think of all the things that you could do with $600 million to $1 billion that would help people in this part of Illinois more than this highway. There are hundreds of things, starting maybe with a new performance center over in Macomb, you know, at the university. That would do an awful lot more for Macomb than this highway will.
Lane is concerned about the environmental impact and the destruction of farmland. He also said a highway would encourage people to drive more at a time when people should be encouraged to drive less. Republican Congressman Ray LaHood said the highway will be built even if it takes another 10 or 20 years. But Lane disagrees. He said there is no need for the highway. He believes it's just a jobs program for politicians to tout.
It's not vote buying exactly, but it's really, in its current guise, it's really make work for the highway construction industry.
The Illinois Department of Transportation said a great deal of preparation work is already done, and IDOT's Mike McLuckey believes the project is just about ready to go. How long it takes will depend on money.
You know, if it trickles in a little at a time, it's going to take a long time. If it comes in big bunches, you know, we can get it done. Just the money.
The next step for IDOT is a final series of public hearings on its chosen alignment. Those hearings will be held this fall or winter. It could be a final time for supporters and opponents to say what they think about plans to build Route 336 between Macomb and Peoria. Rich Egger reporting.
Earth and Sky.
In 2006, the Pew Initiative on Food and Biotechnology found that 43% of Americans think food from cloned animals is unsafe to eat.
And I think it's very common for any of us. When there's something that we don't understand, there's always a little bit of hesitancy and a little bit of fear.
That's Mark Walton of Viagen, a cloning company. In 2008, he sat on a national science panel exploring issues of eating cloned animals. Walton called cloning the newest tool for animal breeding.
The reason that I think it's got so much potential in animal breeding is that it's the only technology that really allows you to take a single animal that has the combination of traits that you're interested in and reproduce that animal multiple times to be able to multiply the impact of the genetics.
He emphasized that clones are too expensive to end up as steak, citing $13,000 to clone a cow.
These are breeding animals, and so consumers are not going to see cloned food in the grocery store. There will be offspring from clones or grand offspring from clones that actually become the meat and milk producing animals.
Also in early 2008, both the European Food Safety Authority and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration announced their decision.